But the second category of conflict might be called unrest by people who did count, the members of the political nation, those whose voices mattered to the French crowns, or at least those who could make their voices matter. And it's the discussion of that that I'm going to begin with this lecture right now. The rebellions by the politically influential in early modern France were usually referred to by contemporaries as the Fronde, and the rebels themselves were called Frondeurs. It's a kind of an odd term. The designation comes from a colloquial term for a child's slingshot, and the idea was to denigrate, in a sense, the opponents or the critics of the crown and compare them to children who were just slinging mud around with slingshots and things like that. Now, there were two distinct, although in no sense of the word unrelated, Frondes in the period between 1648 and 1653. The first of these was the so-called Fronde of the Parlements between 1648 and 49, that is to say a Fronde or resistance by the most senior and prestigious law courts in all of France. The second Fronde we might want to call the Fronde of the Princes. It's usually assigned to the years 1649 to 1653 and thus represents the discontent of the landed aristocracy, the traditional social and political elites in early modern France. Now, these two uprisings, these Frondes, generated really a great deal of political turbulence. They don't have the same cachet as the English Civil War. But nonetheless, it's worth pointing out that over the course of these Frondes, the chief minister to the crown, a man by the name of Cardinal Mazarin, would actually not once, but actually twice be forced into exile. He had to leave France altogether on two occasions. And the intendants, those key servants of the French crown, would actually be abolished in the course of the Fronde. On the other hand, by the year 1653, there's a sense in which Humpty Dumpty had been put back together again. Mazarin was back in power, and the intendants had also begun to return. So there's a sense in which the Fronde sees a kind of a very rapid cycle of a real crisis of the French monarchy, and yet ending with the monarchy being back in place at the end of everything. I'd like to begin now with this lecture with the Fronde of the Parlements between 1648 and 1649. This Fronde, this uprising, was really intimately bound up with the fiscal crisis of the monarchy. The monarchy had been really overspending its resources with complete abandon as a result of its deepening involvement during the Thirty Years' War. We have seen in earlier lectures how the Thirty Years' War bankrupted the crown of Spain, forced it to make concessions, acknowledge the independence of the Dutch Republic, and so on and so forth. We've seen how the fiscal pressures of the Thirty Years' War ultimately also forced the Austrian Habsburgs to make all kinds of concessions. And the context of all this was these two powers, the Spanish and Austrian Habsburgs, being pressured by France. And when we looked at the Thirty Years' War, we had an image of, you know, powerful and wealthy France squeezing the exhausted Habsburgs. I think it's worth stressing, at least when looking at French domestic politics, that this process wasn't easy for the French crown either. It went through an enormous amount of strain in fighting the Thirty Years' War, and ultimately into a very similar kind of financial crisis. We have already seen in the previous lecture how in the year 1634 the crown had simply arbitrarily decided it was going to renege on interest payments of something like £10 million to its various creditors. We have also seen in that previous lecture how the crown, having done so, having cheated its creditors out of so much money, was then obliged to send the intendants to the provinces to oversee tax collection. That is to say, these crown royal servants who operated by commission rather than being venal office holders, people who owned their position inside the machinery of the French state. Now, the seemingly permanent insolvency of the French crown, its incessant pursuit of fresh revenues, its constant financial crises, imposed really severe strains on French society. That probably goes without saying by this point. But of all the groups in society who felt the force of the crown's fiscal policies, of its grasping desire for ever more money, from a political point of view, it seems to me that the most interesting of all are the venal office holders. And they're interesting really for two distinct reasons. First of all, the venal office holders were actually exempt from direct taxation. So they were being squeezed, you know, in an indirect sort of way. But second of all, and in a way even more interestingly, the venal office holders were really a crucial element in the administration of the state itself. Almost all of the officials in the state machinery of tax collection, this huge bureaucracy which had increased so dramatically between the early 16th and early 17th century, almost all of these people were venal office holders. And there's a sense, therefore, in which the venal office holders have this very interesting sort of ambiguous position. On the one hand, they are ruthlessly exploited, they are persecuted, they are cheated by the French crown, and yet at the same time, They are themselves the mechanism of exploitation of the rest of society. They are both exploiters and exploited. They're caught in a very paradoxical kind of position.